Hi, I'm Casper Ter Kuil, and welcome to The Nearness. In each episode, we invite a wisdom teacher or a scholar to guide us into a practice that will help us explore life's big questions and connect with the family of things.
We discover in the silence, we discover how afraid we really are, and we discover in time, just like you tasted, that we are safe, we are loved, and we have no need to fear. And if we could operate from that awareness, it would change everything in our life.
Noise. Our lives are filled with noise. Music, TV shows, podcasts, meetings, kids. And with all of that outer noise, there's the inner noise too. An incessant stream of thoughts and desires and fears that make up our inner monologue. How magical, then, is the practice of silence? Spiritual traditions across the world teach us about the profound transformation hidden in the depths of silence. And that silence is not simply the absence of noise, but the presence of something beautiful and true. To teach us about the practice of silence, we're joined by Felina Nicole, the author of the book Mindful Silence, who for nearly 20 years has served in more than 70 countries building community among victims of human trafficking. And today, she works as a spiritual director, helping people lead more fulfilling and grounded lives. I thought I had a good sense of what silence was all about, but this conversation and the practice that she teaches towards the end of the conversation really blew open for me how I think about silence and understanding that silence is a way of seeing the world differently and that when we enter into it, there is nothing to be afraid of. So, Felina, we're talking about the practice of silence together today, but I want to learn first of all, was silence something that you grew up with? Was this a practice that you had at home as a kid or something that you'd kind of discovered for yourself later in life?
I don't know that anyone's ever asked me that. And when you ask it, I immediately am, you know, taken back to the context of my childhood and remembering that there actually was a lot of silence at home. Silence wasn't a foreign thing. Time kind of quiet and alone was a welcomed part of my home life. Maybe the family culture, you know, we weren't a family who always had the television on, for example, and it was okay to, you know, go outside and play by myself and experience relative silence. But as you say, in the silence, it's not necessarily an absence of noise. There's presence in the silence. I think I discovered that probably at an early age.
Hmm. Did you have a religious family growing up, or was it? I always think if someone doesn't have a TV, there's something going on. So I'm always curious, what was that about? Only because I was the same, you know. We didn't have a TV either.
Well, let me clarify. We did have a television, but it was not on all the time. But I did grow up in a religious home. My father was a pastor in the evangelical tradition. And so we were surrounded with religious sensibilities around Christianity. But beyond that, you know, I witnessed my father's devotion to God. So for as long as I can remember, and even to this day when I go back to visit him, he takes time every morning to be in prayer. You know, it's something quite remarkable to grow up watching your father make time for that. So I'm sure that had a big influence on the way I oriented myself to God.
I think there's something very brave about intentionally entering silence. Like I notice, like I suck at it. I really do. And I can shape that within a story of like, I love music and I love singing. And so I want to, you know, I want to be listening to it all the time. And I'm stimulated by great conversations. So I need podcasts like when I'm in the shower. And
That's quite an image, let me say.
maybe not one we'll invite people to imagine too closely, but even as a teenager, like, I remember I really struggled to fall asleep, and I started listening to the radio when I was 13, 14, and I would put this little mini radio player underneath my pillow so my parents wouldn't see, and I would hear it, you know, through the softness of the pillow, and it was late night, you know, talk sport kind of radio or politics and things, and I think there's something confronting about silence. And so hearing you describe your dad intentionally making time for that and seeing that as a young person, like, do you think you always had that courage to step into it, or has it been scary for you as well?
Yeah, I think I don't remember ever really fearing it. I was drawn to it. But as an adult, when I really entered into contemplative spirituality and made an intentional decision to go along the contemplative path, if you will, then we can talk more about what I mean by that. I went deeper and deeper into silence and found myself on like meditation retreats where I would go into very intensive silence for 7-10 days, absolute silence, and then lots of meditation practice. There were moments of facing some pretty deep fear. And so I think it's really critical that you bring that up early on in our discussion, that going into silence does require courage. And perhaps some of us are a little bit more prepared to enter into the silence.
Mm. Well, let's talk more about that contemplative path, because, you know, I think it's easy to think of a contemplative practice like silence is something for someone who retreats to the desert or lives in a hermitage or, you know, kind of separates themselves from the world. But that's the opposite of your life story. I mean, you've worked in tens of countries in situations of extreme need, working with victims of trafficking, amongst others. And so can you talk about how this silence as a contemplative practice has lived in your personal and professional life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I, as a young person, young adult, I was filled with all kinds of idealism and altruistic kinds of ambitions, if you will. And I wanted to make a difference in the world. I wanted to do something good. I wanted to be of service, and spent the first 17 years of my adulthood really in some of the most horrific conditions of poverty and injustice all around the world, with that intention and motivation around, you know, wanting to make a difference. Thankfully, early on, I met Mother Teresa and worked with her in the Missionaries of Charity in Calcutta, an extraordinary influence on me, just by witnessing her life and her community. And so coming from an evangelical kind of Western religious sentiment, you know, I was very involved in like an activist kind of approach to healing the world. Meeting her introduced me to this dynamic of integrating contemplation with action. As I served with her and I watched her community, I would be starting the day with them in their chapel, what they call the Mother House, where all the sisters live. And their chapel was built on the busiest, loudest street in Calcutta. So it faced the world in a really powerful, overwhelming kind of way. And that's where they would pray. They would start their day every morning like that, you know, and the morning wakes up very early in Calcutta, the community, the city. So that's how they would start the day, drenched in the needs of the world, really, like as the sounds are just bombarding their chapel. And then in the various homes that were dedicated to serving the poorest of the poor, in particular, the House for the Dying is where I spent a lot of time. And so literally, people are dying right before you. And the sisters would do the work. They would tend to the dying. They would do all the basic care. But routinely throughout the day, they would withdraw to the chapel and they would pray. And I watched that rhythm of service and prayer or action and contemplation and the way that they were living that rhythm. And it was very different from the organization I was a part of. And I was seeing a lot of my staff burning out in that work. And mother and her sisters, rarely did you see burnout. So that made me really kind of wake up and pay attention. What is the quality of this way of living in the world, in a world of need, versus the way our community was approaching it? And that set me along the path then to really discover this contemplative spirituality and way of being.
Mm. I think it also tells us that silence is not a luxury. You know, I think so often the image of silence for me is like a spa with like robes and like a massage or something. Like it feels like a reward for having done something or having completed something, rather than, as you're describing it, just a necessary component of our everyday.
Mm. It's the origin from which we produce. It's the well from which we produce, right? That's how I've experienced it. Now, when I got started on making time intentionally for silence through contemplative practice, it was a drastic shift, and it was difficult. It seemed as if everyone and everything around me was pulling me in a different way, in a different energy, in a different flow, kind of away from silence, stillness, solitude. So I felt that pull, and I felt very alone in my pursuit to kind of resist that raging flow, really, of life. That had at that point kind of really taken its toll on me. You know, I was beginning to really feel like this isn't sustainable, the way that I'm living in the world. I don't think I saw it as a reward. It was more of like this necessary, if I'm going to keep doing this work in the world, I have to do it in a different way.
I love that image of silence as a well, like there's a generative nature to it. It's not the absence of something, but it we're getting in touch with something, or we're filling our cup with something. Like, what's the something? what do we find in silence that does that?
Yes. Oh, this is getting to the heart of it. In the silence, we are entering into conditions that allow us to awaken.
Mm.
So if we can think of, you know, when we're not including those elements in our life, solitude, silence, stillness, we're asleep, not really in control of our life, but being controlled by circumstances of life or obligations or just the collective energy of whatever culture we're a part of that's driving the masses, you know. And in the West, I think, you know, we are certainly collectively driven by a lot of energies that aren't serving any of us very well. They're kind of out of control, and we get caught up in the consumerism and the capitalism and the materialism and all of that that then drives the masses, right? And like just kind of like being pulled in all these different directions. So when we come into silence and we start to make room and space for silence, that gives us an opportunity to awaken and to discover that we actually have power and choice in the way that we orient our life and take responsibility for oneself and one's community. So there's in the silence, what is the something? It is the space to awaken. and then to begin to see. And that's really the essence of the word contemplation in its Latin form, contemplatio, is to see, to observe. And then life has a whole new meaning and becomes this really incredible adventure of seeing what is within and without, and then finding greater inner resource to live this life in its most fulfilling form.
Hmm. As you're speaking, I'm having these images of like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, you know, the door into Narnia, or the secret garden, or like Alice in Wonderland, like falling into this different reality, which is also our own, but it's different. Like that sense of perspective. And I don't know if you've come across Robert Sardello, who's written a lot about silence as well. And I think he echoes this, where he writes about silence heals the ambitious, self-serving, often cruel goal of self-improvement and reveals instead the activity of spiritual beings and spiritual life. And so it's that same sense of like silence as a portal or as a door into, yeah, I love that, a different way of seeing. And you've written about what it awakens us to is also the reality of our own death. Like we awaken to the fact that we are mortal beings and that there will be an end to our lives. Is that what connects then to that sense of agency of like, okay, so you have your life. Like, what will you do with it?
Oh, absolutely. Mystics across the traditions say something like, always keep death before you. Always keep death before you. You know, the perspective, like you say, that this gives. And to realize that we have a limited time on this planet, and we actually aren't in control of much of anything in this life. So how can we then really like be a part of life with a capital L? So how do we get back in touch with our true nature that is in harmony and in sync with all of nature? And how can we best steward that life in a way that when I think of stewarding my life, it's about living my life to the fullest, my fullest potential. How do I awaken that and access that potential? If we could all be awakened and living in that kind of responsible way, what a beautiful world we could create together, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, you work now as a spiritual director, so you help people navigate these kind of questions in their own spiritual life. Yeah, how do you help people make space for silence in their lives?
Well, certainly in my client work, one-on-one client work, we make the space together when we meet. And I think as the individual client is learning that quality of being in our sessions, it makes it more accessible when they're alone. Same is true in the group work that I do. You know, when I can support others, that gives them the courage, right, to go into the silence, to go into this way of being that may seem foreign to someone, but yet they're drawn to it. So if I can support that process, then they, I think, are able to access it more easily on their own.
I'm just suddenly seeing this connection, Felina, of like, yeah, we have to learn how to be quiet by being quiet with someone else. And I'm just thinking of you, like seeing your father in the mornings, right? Like what an amazing gift for a parent to give their child is like the teaching of comfort in silence, that there's nothing to fear. And actually there's treasure here to be discovered. Like I've always thought of silence kind of as an individual practice, or at least that's the easiest way to do it. But I'm so wrong. Like we need each other to be quiet together.
Yeah, I love that connection that you're seeing there. And I can't wait to tell my dad that he was such a central part of this conversation. And I know that in the group work that I've been a part of, there is a collective support that happens. And a collective quality that most people experience like, oh my gosh, it's so much easier to do this in a group than when I'm by myself. I think it has something to do with the co-regulation of our nervous system, where our nervous systems are experiencing the sense of safety and calm that otherwise, maybe alone, our environment is not offering, you know?
That makes so much sense. And, you know, even just in a simple, like visiting a Quaker meeting or in an activist context of vigils, like public witness gatherings where people are maybe commemorating, you know, someone who's died, or I remember when war broke out, like going to a vigil, and the quality of the silence together is different from the quality of silence when I'm by myself. It feels like a muscly silence in a way that maybe when I'm by myself, it's more wispy. And so just starting to think about how do I find communities of silence?
I've always thought it would be quite a gift to, you know, families to cultivate silence together. I've only known one family who has intentionally done that with their children, raised their children with morning, you know, silent meditation before the kids go off to school kind of thing. You know, I mean, what a gift, right?
Incredible. That's super parenting. Yeah.
Super parenting, yeah.
I'm wondering, Felina, would you welcome us into some silence? Maybe we could practice together for a moment?
Yeah, I would love to do that. I think that's really appropriate. So for everyone who's listening, if you could just take a moment to stop whatever you might be doing while you're listening and allow yourself to find a seat. Notice the support of your seat and the support of the earth beneath you. And place your attention at the base of the spine. And notice, if you can, this subtle pull of gravity at the root of the spine, connecting you to the center of the earth and to all that is. And then follow the spine all the way up to the crown of the head. Notice the spine straightening a little bit more and letting there be space between the vertebrae. And at the crown of the head, notice the crown opening and lifting toward the heavens. Then I'll invite you to take a few deep belly breaths with me. Let's inhale together. Hold at the top. Exhale slowly and gently, completely, letting all that air out at the bottom of the belly. Again, inhale. Hold. Exhale. Inhale, hold, exhale. One more, just like that. Inhale, hold, exhale. And now let that breath return to its normal rhythm. Noticing now the effortless effort of the body breathing itself without you having to do anything, like the ocean tide. The breath moves like water, in and out. And so you can begin to inquire here and notice Any particular thoughts, emotions, or sensations that might be surfacing. Rather than getting carried away by thought, emotion, or sensation, you can let that inner observer, inner witness, just watch and pay attention. So notice that you are not your thoughts, you are not your emotions, and you are not sensations. You are the one observing all of that. And then we can take a big belly breath together. And reminding ourselves where we are, the support of our seat and the support of the earth beneath us. And bringing to mind our surroundings. And when we're ready, we can gently open the eyes.
Wow. Silence is home.
Could it be?
There's nothing to be afraid of. Mm. Yeah, that's beautiful. I just also really connected with that experience of like melting into the bigger silence. Like it didn't take a lot of effort to go through the portal, to go through the door, but it was more like the silence within my body was just kind of melting into a bigger silence. That's beautiful, Felina. Thank you.
It's interesting that you said there's nothing to be afraid of here, right? We discover in the silence over time, we discover how afraid we really are, how unsafe we feel, and how disconnected we are from love. And we discover in time, just like you tasted, that we are safe, we are loved, and we have no need to fear. And if we could operate from that awareness, it would change everything in our life, because we discover over time how much of our activity is actually driven by an unconscious sense of I'm not safe, I'm not loved, I'm afraid. And if we could move through our day connected to that place of home within, then, you know, that's the kind of quality of being that allows for some of the most heroic examples of life, right? I think of Dr. King and Mahatma Gandhi and all the incredible icons, right, who could do the unthinkable. They knew, they were in touch with, nothing can harm me. Even if they take my life, I am safe, I am loved, I have no need to fear, because I'm a part of this much bigger organism that is not just about my little me, right?
So for those of us starting a silence practice, is there a sort of mini ingredients list or a starter pack that you might offer us to cultivate this as a practice in our everyday life?
I've thought of this, Casper, in terms of like a formal practice and an informal practice. Let me start with the formal practice. Set your time. How long do you want to sit? Maybe start for 5 minutes and work up. And it's pretty much universally taught that a minimum of 20 minutes of a sitting practice is helpful, because it takes so many minutes to come into the silence. It's advisable to start in the morning, first thing, before you get pulled in every which way. So to start in the morning, work up to 20 minutes, but you know, just do what you can and let it be a gift to yourself rather than something you have to achieve or accomplish. So then for an informal practice, as you're going through your active day, three things, okay? Notice when your impulse is to fill the space with sound and choose silence instead. So next time you get in the shower, Casper, choose not to turn on the podcast.
Yep.
Just that once, you know, just for that time. Okay.
I'm going to do it.
Second, when you're in the silence, then develop your inner witness. So as you're in the shower, in the silence, let yourself observe sensations and emotions that are there and any thoughts that come up. So we're going to just observe all that, right? So notice when your impulse is to fill the silence, make an option for silence. Second, develop that inner witness while you're in the silence and observe what's happening in terms of thought, emotion, and sensation.
I love it. Well, finally, Felina, I know that we'll be exploring these questions in our community, and I wonder if there's any reflection questions that you can offer us as we cultivate this practice of silence.
Yeah, sure. Let's see. How about when you're thinking about your relationship to silence? What is it that prevents you from practicing silence? What keeps you from the silence? And conversely, what draws you to the silence? What is inviting about it?
Beautiful. Beautiful. Felina, I want to thank you so much for being our teacher today and for sharing the gifts of this incredible well of generativity that I feel like you've helped us see silence as. And I also just want to thank the community in Calcutta and your dad, like the people who shaped silence in your life and who have then passed it on to us today. I feel invited and inspired to make more space with others for silence. And that is not something I expected from this conversation. So thank you.
It's been a joy for me to connect with you. Connection is everything to me. So thank you for inviting me into the conversation and being really present with me as we try to bring words to silence.
Thank you for listening to the Nearness Podcast. The Nearness is a dedicated space to explore life's big questions with like-minded others. Visit thenearness.coop to find out more. You can also find us on Instagram and join our newsletter to learn more about events and courses from the Nearness. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you soon.